Hi, and welcome to the Body Positive Goddess podcast. My name is Freya Serafina, and I will be your host. On the Body Positive Goddess podcast, we talk all things body positivity, self-love, self-care, with a little bit of magic weaved in. This is my new series called The Mysteries of Eros, where I also incorporate women's spirituality, goddess spirituality, goddess history and lore, and all of the ways in which women, the goddess, and our beautiful bodies have been erased throughout history. Thank you for being here. Let's get started. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I hope you're all doing really, really well and surviving this heat that is smacking us in the face and the ass every single day. I hate knowing how hot it is and having to go into work and like not just sitting at the beach and having endless amounts of money to fuel all of my dreams and desires. So I've been suffering, obviously. I hope you haven't been suffering. But anywho, we're going to finish up everything with Diotima today. And I'm also going to talk about Venus retrograde, because I've been seeing a lot of things on social media, online. And there's like a little bit of fear mongering I've noticed. And it doesn't have to be that way. And we're going to jump into some other things that I've noticed that have been going on kind of in like the witchy spiritual community. And I'd really love to know your thoughts and your feedback on that. Okay, let's dive in. So the last time we spoke, or the last episode that I made in regard to Diotima's Ladder of Love, was maybe like 2 episodes ago. And we were talking about, love of institutions, which sounds like super stuffy. And what does that have to do with anything? But we were talking about it in through the lens of how the media and society and, different organizations and institutions concoct ideas around body health, physical health, body image, and how all of a sudden we're aspiring to this unrealistic beauty standard. And it's really detrimental, not just to our physical health, but our mental health and our emotional health. And so the next rung on the ladder, if you will, has to do with the beauty and love of knowledge, and then ultimate beauty by combining all those things, and beauty and love of itself and yourself. And I know knowledge doesn't also sound like it could have anything to do with body positivity, but I disagree, because we know for a fact that the older we get, the more that we learn, the more we experience, the more that we know, that we understand that we have often been lied to about what makes us beautiful. We've been fed information and images about what constitutes as beauty. And usually it's not images of fat women, right? We're told that we're ugly or disgusting or unhealthy, that we take up too much space. And when we dismantle images around what beautiful body should be, then we come to the understanding that all bodies are beautiful. And then we can apply that to loving and accepting ourselves. And I think that's how this applies, this beauty and love of knowledge applies to body positivity. You know, even the whole construct of BMI, which I might have spoken about in terms of in the institution one, but I can't remember at this point. But even BMI is a construct. It's a relatively new construct, and it's used as a marker for what makes someone healthy based on the amount of fat that they have on their body. And we know, because we have learned and read and have moved through the world and have gained knowledge, we know that that's bullshit and that all bodies are different. We know this. We know that all bodies are different, and that trying to compare one person's body to another simply based on the number on a scale is bullshit. And yet society wants us to behave that way anyway. But because we're applying Diotima's knowledge and love of knowledge to ourselves, we know that the more research we do and the more people we encounter and the more dismantling we can do of our own minds and society's concept of what is beautiful, we know that that will get better and that we can learn to love ourselves and that we can learn to accept ourselves exactly as we are. And that it's like, it just makes me so angry because, you know, I think of all the things that society has just like constructed. And it's just meant to limit our bodies and limit how we feel about our bodies. And when you feel like shit, it's so hard to make decisions that will allow you to flourish and feel joy and feel love. When society makes you feel like shit for simply existing in the body that you have, how can you possibly want to go out and do amazing things and be an incredible person if you're told that you're supposed to feel bad about who you are based on what you look like? But hey, that's how the control stays. That's how capitalism profits, not to get like super crazy, but like that's how it profits. I mean, how many systems and freaking things are we supposed to buy into as women or even just as bigger bodies because we're told that we have to change something about ourselves, you know? And if we just expand it to women in general, I mean, razors, that only came about, I think, like at the end of World War II or something. We needed to boost the economy. So we were told that women needed to start shaving because body hair was gross. So razors, waxing, all of that stuff, right? Makeup, any other kind of beauty device or thing you can purchase, right? You know, And I want to be very clear that I'm not saying that you shouldn't do those things, right? If, like, I've dyed my hair how many times? If dyeing my hair makes me feel cool or makes me feel awesome or amazing or loved, then you should do it. If you love doing makeup, you should do it. If you want to shave your whole body like a naked hairless cat, you should do it. You should do what makes you happy, right? You should always do what makes you happy as long as it doesn't harm somebody else. But what I'm saying is there are lots of us, myself included, for a very long time that felt it was necessary in order to be beautiful, in order to be accepted, in order to be loved and valued, I had to conform to all of these things that society told me I needed to do. And one of those was lose weight. Oh my God, was it lose weight? How many different weight loss programs exist? I mean, holy shit. I think I was put, I did Weight Watchers, the Atkins diet, Jenny Craig, low carb, whatever the fuck, like keto. I mean, how many things exist? And then as soon as you get off of them, all of a sudden you gain all the weight back and more. Why? Because that was never where your body was supposed to be. If you, and again, if you want to lose weight, fucking fantastic. But being told that you have to in order to be accepted or loved is the problem. If you want to do anything in life that alters your body or your physical appearance in any way, you should do that. But you should never feel like you have to change yourself in order to be valued, accepted, and loved. And that is my problem. Okay. And it creates something that I don't know if anyone's ever read The Second Sex by Simone de Beauvoir. I can never say that right. It's like an older text, but she talks about something known as body alienation. And this body alienation, it like keeps us, especially as women, because of all of these things that people, society have said you have to do in order to be beautiful. It keeps women, you know, adjacent to their bodies, a step outside of their bodies, a step back from their own bodies, from knowing their bodies, loving their bodies, accepting their bodies, feeling their bodies. And a lot of that has to do with sexuality as well and how we express sexuality. And one of the things that Simone and many other scholars talk about is this idea of taboo around our own bodies, because society has told us XYZ, so we believe XYZ. And when we're presented with new information, we're like, oh, wait, that's not right. That makes me feel shame. And one of the big places that we feel shame is around menstruation and any other natural bodily functions, which can include sexual functions as well, right? So what I'd love to do is think about how, you know, science and knowledge can actually assist us or assist in bringing us back to the body so we don't have this kind of body alienation, right? And I also want to bring us back into the body in terms of the size of our bodies, the shape of our bodies, the weight of our bodies, the function of our bodies in other ways. You know, if you're differently abled, what has society told you about that? You know, and I try to remind people all the time that body positivity, although it is steeped in what our bodies look like, and it has been, you know, often co-opted to just be about weight, it's about everything, right? It's about everything. And I know that there is this, you know, argument between body positivity, body acceptance, and body neutrality, with body neutrality hopefully being the goal, because, you know, there are some people that say, well, why do I have to love my body? And while I have a little bit of an issue with that, because I do think you should love your body, I see the value in being neutral around your body as well. I absolutely see that value. And so I'm not here to be like, you should only practice body positivity, you should only practice body neutrality. I think that that is a decision that should be up to you. But I do think we should dismantle taboos around our body and our body's functions. And I think that if we dismantle these kind of taboos, then we can move beyond the things that society tries to shame us for. And I think when we develop knowledge around how our bodies function and work, we remove this element of shame. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I got my period for the first time, it was considered something dirty and shameful. It should be hidden away. It should be secret. No one should know about it. I grew up, thankfully, I had a mixture of, you know, a religious upbringing that was maybe a little more conservative, but I also did have a liberal leaning, sort of democratic, I suppose, upbringing. And also, I was pretty headstrong. So even, you know, all of these things that happened to me, I knew somewhere that, like, girl power was necessary. I grew up with the Spice Girls, very, very grateful for that. But there's still, even with all of that, right, there's still all of these things that happened to me that created shame in my body. And I think the first shame started with being shamed for my weight. I was always bigger. The second shame happened when I got my period. And the third shame happened around any sort of sexual intimacy and interaction. You know, it was bad, taboo, disgusting, all of these things. So that when you get sexual urges, you're like, wait, no, this is bad. This is wrong. And I'm here to remind you, because I'm sure you know this by now. That's why you're listening to a podcast like this, that's not wrong. There's nothing wrong, and it's natural. And I think the more knowledge we gain around what is natural in our bodies, the better we become. The better we become as a society, where we don't shame young girls and boys, and we don't shame, you know, people in general. And we don't shame especially young girls for bleeding, for doing the thing that their bodies do, right? or for not bleeding. You know, sometimes that takes a while, right? And all of that is okay. And I think when we move beyond shame and taboo, we get to this final step toward achieving Diotima's ultimate expression of love, or in this case, self-love, right? By combining all of these other steps in the ladder that I've been talking about, we combine these steps of accepting the worthiness of our bodies and others' bodies, moving beyond the aesthetic function of the body towards loving the soul, dismantling harmful institutions that seek to oppress, and re-educating society on bodily functions, we are then able to achieve the ultimate form of body positive expression, self-love. I feel Diotima provides us with a blueprint with her ladder of love that will allow us to utilize body positivity to achieve the ultimate expression of beauty. Body positivity is not merely about expanding standards of beauty, but rather about our emotional relationship to our bodies. I think if we can accept the emotional relationship to our bodies and you know, move past body alienation to remember that we are our bodies, then we'll be able to achieve an ultimate and unified expression of self-love and acceptance. And I think we find that in body positivity. When we love ourselves, we create the capacity to love all things. In loving all things, we create the ultimate expression of unity and love. And that, my friends, concludes the Diotima series, the Ladder of Love series, and moves beyond into all the other things that we love to talk about. Like Venus retrograde. So I've been seeing a lot of things on the interwebs about Venus retrograde, and all of the things that I'm seeing, I'm a Leo, my partner's a Scorpio, that has, you know, moving into Venus retrograde, Venus and Leo, has big implications for us and some other, fixed signs as well. I've been seeing a lot of things like, you're going to break up with your partner. You're going to, go talk to an ex, you're gonna do this, you're gonna blah, blah, blah. Everything's gonna come crashing down and burning, and you need me to make decisions right now. And it all sounds really do or die and really scary. And I was like, excuse me, if my boyfriend thinks that he's gonna go back and talk to an ex, I don't fucking think so. That would also never happen. But what I'd like to say about all of those things, if you've been on the interwebs and you're seeing this sort of like, you've got to make a choice right now, you've got to do this, or this thing is going to happen to you, take a breath. No, you don't. And I will clarify by saying, I'm not the biggest astrology girly in the world, right? I don't understand all the intricacies of astrology, though I love astrology very much. But what I do understand are signs and symbols and insight and the way in which attraction, manifestation, and ritual and spell casting works. I understand how the gears of the universe can turn and what that can mean for us. And I also understand the importance of making decisions and how those decisions can impact us. And all of the information and research I've done on Venus retrograde has led me to this, okay? If you are inactive, then you will get more of the same old shit. If you make a decision that could lead you back into a toxic way of being, a negative space that you don't want to be in anymore, you're going to stay there, or you're going to get more negative experiences. If you don't want to live the life you're living, but you do nothing about it, well, guess what? If you don't like the life you're living, but you make the same choices, repeat the same steps, or don't try anything new, that's where you're going to stay, or more bad stuff is going to happen. If you don't like the life you're living and you choose to make a positive change, or you choose to do this thing you've always thought about but never thought you could do it, or you were too scared to do it, or you choose to evaluate your relationships and let go of certain people or patterns that don't serve you, then you're going to move into a new and positive space. And all Venus retrograde is giving you is the chance. Venus is giving you the opportunity to take a look at your life, to evaluate your choices, to evaluate what you would like for your future, and to act, to move, to initiate. Now, sometimes that's harder for some people than others, right? Like, my Venus is in Virgo, and it doesn't like to be there. It doesn't sit comfortably on Virgo, right? I've had a lot of trauma and hardship in my life, around my love life in particular. I've been in countless abusive relationships. My familial relationships are not great. I've lost a lot of friendships. I've lost a lot of love and self-respect for myself, love for myself, right? I've made a lot of decisions that have kept me in the same place over and over again, and then wondered why I was still there. Well, because I was either inactive or I made the same poor choices. You know, isn't like insanity doing the same thing over and over again but expecting a different result? Yeah, well, I did that. And I'm not saying, let's be very clear, I am not saying that I am responsible for the abuse that I received. No one is ever, ever responsible for the abuse that someone else enacts upon them. But I am responsible for what I do next, for what I do about the situation I found myself in. And I never really let myself heal. I didn't do it. And that's not to say that you can't heal while in relationship with someone else. Me and my partner currently are doing a lot of healing, you know, and we're even seeking help outside of our relationship to strengthen our relationship. We're making good and healthy choices that will propel us into a future that we want together and that we want for our own lives. But I didn't let myself heal in between those relationships. And I was also in an environment that was not conducive for healing. I was in a home space that was not conducive for healing. So I never even knew what I wanted, really. I didn't even know that healing after an abusive relationship is something you should do. There were in my early relationships, I wouldn't have even known that they were abusive. No clue. Not a damn clue, okay? And so of course I repeated patterns. Of course I repeated cycles. Of fucking course I did. And that is something you will never catch me doing again. I like to think of this retrograde because Venus retrograde, Venus in Leo especially, oh my God, I'm a Leo. It's all about the self-love, baby. But self-love also includes who you let into your sphere of love. And it doesn't just have to be intimate partner relationships or romantic relationships. It can also be who your friends are, who your mentors are. Ooh, that's a big one. Who your mentors are. Who do you allow to influence and instruct you? What your family relationships are like. I think this even trickles over, because self-love trickles over into everything. This could trickle over into, okay, well, do I feel valued at work? Do I feel valued in this educational program? Do I feel valued in this volunteer opportunity? You know, do I feel valued in all of the spaces that I enter with all of the people that are there? Now, you're never going to have a perfect life, right? Nothing's ever going to be fucking perfect, okay? You're going to work with people you don't like and don't respect you. I'm not saying you should just jump ship because there's an asshole, right? But what do you do in those situations to protect your energy and protect yourself and take care of yourself? That's what I'm getting at. I gave a talk recently, and we talked about this concept of using the master's tools to dismantle the master's house or setting the fucking house on fire. Not everyone has the opportunity and ability to just set the house on fire, right? And obviously that's a metaphor. Please don't set your house on fire. I just want to say that, so I'm not responsible for you setting your house on fire. But some of us are stuck at home in places that are unsafe for us. Some of us are stuck in a job that might not be our favorite because the alternative is not having any money and becoming houseless or homeless. That is not a choice that many of us can do, okay? We can't just quit our jobs or cut off our family members as much as we might like to. No, we have to create some sort of safety. And this is the initiation opportunity of Venus in retrograde. Here is the opportunity to enact some self-love and care. Venus retrograde is giving you the chance to take a look at your cycles and your choices and think about how you can break out of patterns that you don't want to be in anymore. It is not an invitation for you to just go talk to your ex or cheat on your partner or have your partner cheat on you. That's not, you know, we're not just going to start Ariana Grande-ing break up with your boyfriend just because it's Venus retrograde. Unless, of course, you evaluate your relationship and you find it to be really unhealthy or rooted in something you no longer want anymore. I'm not saying you can't break up with your partner. But don't just do it because you had a fight and you're like, oh, it's Venus retrograde. We had a fight. We must break up. No, 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 no. Don't do that. Don't do that. Really evaluate what's going on in your life. Evaluate what you want. Evaluate what you want from others and what you're willing to give others. And then make a choice. But at the core, make a choice out of love for yourself. And I think sometimes we confuse boundaries and self-love with just cutting people off. And I don't encourage that either. There's a difference between setting a boundary and placing restrictions on others. The boundary is for us, right? The boundary, if I set a boundary that I refuse to be cursed at in an argument, I don't know, right? The boundary is for me. I can't prevent my partner from cursing, but I can go, okay, well, you just told me to go fuck myself after we have agreed that I don't want to be cursed at during an argument. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to remove myself from this situation until you're calm. Now, if my partner, this is not a real example, by the way, my partner doesn't go tell me to go fuck myself, but if my partner continues to tell me to go fuck myself in an argument, you should evaluate that situation. You know, if your partner continues to disrespect your boundaries, then yeah, you should probably leave. Or if you can't find a compromise there, you should definitely leave. But the first step of that is removing yourself from that situation. You can't control what another person is going to do. And that's like, it's maybe not like, you know, the strongest example that I could give, but it's the first one that I thought of. Boundaries are for you. They are to protect you and take care of you and your emotional and your mental and your physical health. They are not to tell other people what to do. I saw a thing that I posted, I shared, that was like, your religion restricts you. It doesn't restrict other people. And that's kind of in the same vein, right? I can't tell someone else to behave based on my religious beliefs. That would be silly. Oh, wait, politics. But it would be silly in theory. And you should not do that, right? It's the same thing. So this Venus retrograde, don't panic. Don't panic. And I think don't make rash decisions. But if you find yourself experiencing more of the same, over and over again and you don't like it, then you should leave. If you find that you are running away from doing something you've always wanted to do, you should run towards it. Use this portal as an opportunity for growth and change and expansion and self-exploration and self-love. And that's what I have to say about that. Now, this sort of leads me into a really interesting conversation that's been happening in on a pagan listserv that I'm on, an academic pagan listserv. And someone had published an article and they were like, oh, you want to check out my article? And I did. And then a conversation sparked around why a lot of younger people are, you know, not joining covens, they're solo, where's the connection to nature, a lot of conversation around the online space and like consumerism and capitalism, and instead of, you know, finding, you know, your own natural objects, maybe out in the world, maybe in a shop dedicated to magic or spirituality, people are just buying it on Amazon. And it was kind of a big conversation. It was really interesting, actually. And one of my personal takeaways, and this is where I'd really love people's opinions and input, if you have any, as to why people aren't really joining groups or covens, is this is my personal experience. I tried, okay? I have tried to find a coven for so long, and the only coven I really found was online, right? Well, I'd love to start my own coven, but what I have found is that Wicca is typically, and I'm not Wiccan, I think at one point I think I was. Wicca's like the gateway drug for people looking for a spiritual or magical practice or lineage. Wicca's really popular. I'm really grateful to Wicca for reigniting, you know, we're talking like 50s, 60s, 70s, reigniting this desire for worshiping the goddess and alternate magical lineages or spiritual or religious traditions outside of the quote-unquote mainstream. And it was resurgence in paganism, right? And that's great. When you do a little more research into Wicca, you might find that, you know, Gerald Gardner is a little bit problematic, and Wicca often co-opts other indigenous and other spiritual practices. It often steals from practitioners of color. And it's like an amalgamation of things while claiming to be like a resurgence religion of the British Isles. I think the intentions were good and the execution was not necessarily great. And I contributed to the conversation by saying, I think that when younger people encounter some of the more problematic aspects of Wicca, that they stop seeking to join groups that perpetuate these sort of issues that are problematic, and they maybe go off on solo explorations or just finding different lineages and different, you know, communities and covens and groups to connect with. I also think that, you know, the positive side of social media is that we can all connect like this. I can find accounts and groups and people that I really want to follow that might give me information or help to deepen my practice. The downside is that there's very little like fact checking going on. We lose a lot of nuance, and that we sort of accept what people say at face value because maybe they have a large following, or maybe you just like what they're saying, which is fine. But I think because of that, we're not doing a lot of in-depth research into where does this idea come from? Who started this? Who are the key players? Who are the major philosophers or teachers or writers of this particular lineage or faith system? And I think that that's a problem. I think we should be having conversations, more conversations around problematic behavior and cultural and spiritual appropriation And any sort of racism or sexism or misogyny or any sort of ism that takes place within our spiritual and religious practices and lineages, I think we should have more of those conversations. You know, how did white supremacy find its way into Nordic spiritualism and any sort of like Ásatrú lineage and anything that has to do with Vikings? It's like, bro, please do not take my culture and be a white supremacist, right? Those are really important conversations to have. But I think it's also equally important to look to our older leaders and our older writers and our older teachers. They have a wealth of information. And they've been doing this for a really, really long time, connecting to the gods, connecting to the goddesses, connecting to the universe and the earth, practicing their spiritual practices, engaging with community members, and I think there's a lot of value there. And I think we shouldn't just turn them away or not do the research or look at the information because they are coming from a time that's different than ours. I think there's a lot of value in ingesting what we need and leaving what we don't. For example, when we look back at a lot of old, you know, goddess spirituality teachings and wisdom teachers, we're gonna find a lot of binary language around gender, for example. That might not work for you, right? But some of the principles and some of the teachings in regard to the earth, regeneration of the earth, maybe that does work for you. And I see the value in looking at where we came from and looking at where we are now and thinking about, well, where can we go from here? It's like Venus retrograde. I think that some of the pioneers in goddess spirituality or any sort of pagan faith system should be honored and respected. That doesn't mean that they can't be critiqued. And that's an important distinction that I made in my discussion with them. And what I'm saying now is they should be critiqued. We should look to our leaders and see what they've done. And if they've done some really fucked up shit, that should be called out, called in, and acknowledged, okay? And that doesn't mean that we have to keep spreading their information, okay? We can go, all right, well, this is where this started. Here's all the problems with this. Where did it go from there? So I encourage you, if you're, you know, a baby witch, as they say, don't just listen to what people are saying on the internet. Please do your research. Go back. A simple Google search of like prominent scholars on paganism or witchcraft or spirituality will garner you a pretty hefty list of people. And I encourage you to read their work. A lot of their work is open source. But this led me to the other part of the argument, where I said, you know, part of the problem is that a lot of younger people can't just siphon off their time to do a ton of research, to go out into nature and to make these connections, because we're busy trying to survive. I was at a conference in May. And they had asked me, you know, there's a lot of young people on this panel. How do we get more young people involved? And I very honestly said, I could barely afford to get here and I'm presenting. I can barely afford to pay my bills, stay alive, feed myself, and not like want to die. Okay. And if you want younger people to be here, I mean, you didn't even offer a student discount because I asked. There was no student discount. There wasn't even a presenter discount. That feels weird. Okay. Like offer a sliding scale, right? Offer a sliding scale. Okay. Offer scholarship opportunities, offer ways in which to get people involved where we don't have a lot of money, but we have a lot of value and interest that we can offer. And I think it goes back to, well, how come, you know, people are just ordering on Amazon and blah, blah, blah. Well, because it's fucking cheap and convenient and we're tired. We're burnt out. We're fucking spent. I would love to go into my local Botanica or other witch shop and spend all of my money there and support members of my own community. But I'm broke. okay. And I realize that feeding into Amazon is only adding to the capitalism problem. I know. But it's hard. You know, this is where we go back to, how do we burn the house down? Right? I don't have the answers. But I do know that this is another level of accountability and shame. You know, I think there's sometimes some shame around not spending a bunch of money at your local community and a community store. But also, I think there's sometimes shame built into not having the money to be spent as well. And there shouldn't be. You know, someone brought up in the thread a really good point of, you know, I came to Wicca because I didn't need all of this money to, and all of these tools and all of these things to practice my pagan spirituality or my witchcraft. I went out into nature and I picked up a stick and I picked up a rock and I found a bone or a feather. And I was like, facts. And I feel that we've lost a little bit of that disconnection, and I feel we've lost a little bit of personal power. And this certainly goes back to body positivity. When we lose our personal power, we can lose everything: our self-image, our self-worth, our self-love, our identity, our connection to spirit and to nature. We can lose a connection to ourselves and others. So if you're someone who's been struggling in that arena, don't worry. Unfortunately, you're not alone. I think we're all sort of struggling there. If you've been struggling to come back to your spiritual practice, it's okay. It's all right. I know that it sucks, because a lot of the time I look at my altar, I look at my tools, I look at my stuff, I look at myself, and I'm tired. I'm just really, really tired. So if you've been stressed, if you felt shame, it's okay. It's okay. And everything will be okay. And if you've got the energy for it, utilize this Venus portal. Utilize this space of self-exploration and self-love, and take back some of that control. Take back that control in your life. And that can happen in little ways. I think when we hear things like take back the control, we think of these grand gestures. Well, it doesn't have to be. Maybe you get up 30 minutes earlier. Maybe you make a coffee at home instead of buying it from Gregory's like I did. Maybe you go for that walk. Maybe you say no to one more task that someone is asking you to do. Maybe instead of feeling stretched to make everyone happy and please everyone, maybe instead you say, no, I can't do that. I'm sorry. Maybe you own a mistake that you've made. Maybe you forgot something, you forgot someone, and you say, I'm sorry. And you own that. Maybe you develop different time management skills, make more notes for yourself, more alerts on your phone. Maybe you take some breaths. Maybe you pause and give yourself permission to feel and to change and to be everything that you are. It's already within you. Sometimes we just have to make little shifts. And I hope that whatever it is you're looking for in this Venus retrograde, that you get it. As always, thank you for being here. Love you. See you next time.